Last week on Musings and Limitless Discoveries, we met the unwilling bride, Cecile, who decided to send herself to her death in flames of glorious flames, and her sadistic tyrant of a groom, Emperor Istan. Only Istan took a liking to Cecile and told her how to stay alive. Together, they made a mockery of the Empire's national treasury and unleashed an annoyingly non-binary entity. Now, let's get going to the end. A quick note. Before jumping back in, I want to apologize. While editing, I noticed I accidentally might have switched up the pronunciation of Cecile's and Estienne's names in my excitement of telling you the story. I did it without realizing it. I apologize. That happens quite a bit on my end, so I want to let you guys know what's going on. Now, back to our story. It is officially time for the ladies in waiting meeting where Cecile has to pick out who is going to help her serve as Empress of the Kingdom. It doesn't go very well. She walks in, takes a look around, and from all appearances, goes straight for a girl who is considered to be a country bumpkin by the name of Tanya. And why did she pick such a country bumpkin? Because Tanya had a very large brooch on her chest. And unfortunately, what everybody was not aware of was the very annoying entity was screaming in Cecile's head about taking the brooch because it had found its new home. And so because of that, this is what Cecile does. She grabs the girl, takes her away, but all everybody in the room notices was that the girl was wearing a very big, expensive looking brooch. And so they all mistakenly believe that this is what the queen is looking for her ladies in waiting to have. In the meantime, Istian has gone off to war. He gets the uncut gem, nearly kills the crown prince, and returns home hoping to please his new lady. However, this decision is slightly disappointment because he is met by his so-called friend, Irene. You know the Irene we met earlier that's supposed to be the future antagonist that the Sanctress is now working for. Irene is having none of it where she's letting him get by her to do what he wants to do. She's making demands. She wants to see the Empress to be allowed in to immediately become a ladies in waiting. Unfortunately for her, that is something that Istian is not going to let happen. He throws her out of the palace. As it happens, though, while he was gone, Tanya and Cecile bonded over their genuine love of romance novels because Tanya was able to leave the palace unwatched and pick up these very questionable reading materials, unlike Cecile, who is the Empress. And they are having a fangirl bonding moment when Istian comes in and kind of has a fit and gets very jealous over the fact that his lady is feeding food to someone else who is not him. But then we get a cutscene and we learn that the Saintress has gone to pick up Irene from the punishment. Can't remember where they put her, but they took her somewhere that was outside of the palace kind of like a jail cell in a sense. They had to pick her up. And in the meantime, the Sanders is talking about having to make some plans because the big reveal moment is coming and she had to be there because it would be the perfect time to get rid of Cecile and take over her body. Still don't know how she's planning on doing that, but sure. Just like I don't quite understand why her scenes are important enough to be mentioned, because I would be completely okay with her just appearing out of nowhere at the last minute and going, "Who are you?" Anyway, back inside the palace, Tanya has left the room, has left the emperor and empress alone, and Cecile has let it slip that the little annoyance, who has been quiet because he's been updating his home for the past week, having all the fun, thinks that Estienne is impotent as a reason for why she has not gotten pregnant. He does go after the little annoyance. He calls him out, calls the little entity out, and pretty much threatens to destroy his new home. Though he only does so after he kind of sexes Celeste, Cecile, unconscious. This is when we reveal that he's not impotent. He has some kind of dangerous blood in his running through his body that doesn't quite make him human and could be possibly dangerous to anybody else, particularly any offsprings that he has, making them monsters. What more? The thing about it is that even with this dangerous blood, he doesn't want to tell Cecile about it and makes, the little annoyance promise not to mention it ever to her, or that he's impotent, which to me kind of makes him a little bit of a douche, even though I know he's not a good person, but this really just kind of shows how much of a douche he is to me. If he's not going to have kids, he should at least come up with a reason for why she doesn't get pregnant, because it's going to fall back on her for why she hasn't gotten pregnant. It's a concern. That's her duty. She knows exactly what she's supposed to do, but he doesn't care that this is going to be on her, not him, because she does not get pregnant. But moving on. It's now time for Cecile to play hostess in her new role once again for a delegate, which is a little bit different than the first time, because the first time when she was first introduced, it was just to the officials and the nobility of the kingdom. This is a delegation from a whole nother country. It's a completely different thing. And it's now jumping back and forth between Cecile getting ready and the Saintress making her way to the palace. We learn from the Saintress' point of view that things have completely gone off track, is not following her book anymore, and she doesn't quite know what to think. I'm still trying to kind of figure out why she's even there in the first place, like why her character is important. Like, I'm pretty sure we'll probably find out in later books. I'm pretty sure there's other books after this, but right now, I don't know why the Saintress is even in the palace. Either way, we go to the audience chamber, and it's the Celeste and Estienne show again. And let me tell you guys, it's a great one, just as good as the first one. They're having a good time, they're flirting, they're acting like they're in their own little world. And then the delegation comes in and announces where they're from. And Celeste goes straight up. She has no idea where this country is and completely acts like she has no idea that this country is next door to the one where she grew up at. And what does Easton say? That the party has nothing interesting to say if his empress is like not even aware where they are, what is their name, main sort of trade, anything like that, anything that makes them important, Cecile acts like she has no idea and that she's just completely oblivious to everything. Like, she's an idiot. It goes very well, and the party is completely shocked. They're getting ready to leave when one of the party just randomly breaks away. Some random guy just breaks away, and he's holding a large egg and says it can only be awakened when touched by the strongest person. And the strongest person that he can think of to touch it is the Emperor. So he wants the Emperor to touch it. Thankfully, everybody has a reasonable response. And I quote, "Who the hell will be mad enough to take something so suspicious?" Thank goodness. I cannot begin to count how many people would just be like, "Okay, that doesn't seem suspicious at all. Let's touch it." No, don't touch the suspicious thing that says only touch. That's like pushing the big red button that people tell you not to push. And of course, we get a cutscene after that comment about the Saintress kind of magically punching her way through the palace walls, which is weird. I don't know why she's just punching her way through the palace, but either way, we're back in the throne room. Not throne room, the audience chamber. Eastian figures out who this person is. He just steps off the platform, goes to the person, and literally punches the speaker in the face, because it turns out that the speaker is the Mage Lord in disguise. And the Mage Lord, who is a very high-powered magician and is said to be around like 400 years old, has an unhealthy, creepy attraction to Eastian and his blood, which is why he's always trying to get him to give his blood, like do blood donations. Saying that, Eastian, who knows this, starts pretty much beating the guy up. And then out of nowhere just starts and cuts off his arm. And no, I wish I was lying about him literally cutting off his arm. He's not. He literally cuts it off and sends it flying, while the Mage Lord, whose name is Richard, is all like, "Touch it, touch it, touch it, touch it, touch me!" Wait, no, he really doesn't. He doesn't sing that song. But I totally, really feel like he was one step away from just being like, touch it. I really just feel he was there. He was like one step away. All he had to do was just step to the left and he would be there. That's how creepy and close it was. With this scene going on, everybody in the room is just looking kind of dazed and wondering, how did this happen? Why did this happen? When did it go so far left? Cecile kind of realizes that the arm her husband cut off is moving on its own. Like the thing from the Addams Family, just moving on his own with the egg in hand, and it's kind of inching towards her husband from behind where he can't see it because he's too busy beating up Richard. And so she's like, she decides to call out to her husband, jumps in front of it, and the egg touches her. And she's not very strong, so you'd think nothing would happen, right? Nope, she's a main character, and she's a heroine, so of course something's going to happen. A dragon comes out. Where's the dragon? Because why not? Why not a dragon? And that's when we're going to get a big background info dump about the more information about the dangerous blood and how Richard came to learn that Eastian has it, and how Eastian, you know, has a tragic backstory. He was a lab experiment. He wasn't born with this blood, and it was only because of his very twisted father that he ended up with the blood in his body, and that probably explains why he just killed everybody in his family but other than himself. Back to the dragon. The dragon's here, and the dragon is like, "Hey, I'm here. You die." Everybody is freaking out except Richard, because Richard is a creep. Richard's like, "Hey, it's a dragon. I can't do anything with this thing because it is repels magic." Stuck in my head, I went, "Richard, that's when you need to run, son. That's when you need to drop the mic on your touch it song and just run because you can't do nothing here. You don't even have an arm. You're missing arm here. And whatever body parts Easton has already cut in. While they're distract the dragon, everybody runs away. And the Sanctress arrives. And she's legitly screaming when she sees the dragon. Because in her book, it's not a dragon. It's a giant wolf. Of course it's supposed to be a wolf. Of course. Dragon is supposed to be the final boss. The final boss that the Sanctress dies killing. Can I do a cheer for that? Is she about to die? Yay! She was annoying. No more cutscenes. We get to the fight now. Someone has dragged Cecile out of the room. Easton jumps in with his black sword. Tanya, who turns out to be a lot stronger than she looks, is in there beating the dragon up too. And then finally Kane, the commander, has joined the fight. And so it's the three of them against the dragon. And they're like beating the dragon up. But the dragon keeps getting on up. And they beat him down and he gets on back. And then the Sanctress comes out of her shock. And she steps in to fight. Cecile does come back though. It turns out she happened to remember from her childhood about a character that was named after her who tamed a dragon and had an incantation? A spell. We're going to say she had a spell, a chant spell, to bind the dragon to her. And so she takes the book back to the audience chamber because something doesn't feel right about her servant. She feels like they're out. Get her or kill her, but she runs back to the audience chamber because she feels safe with her dangerous husband, even though there's a dragon in the building. She gets back there, she says the spell, winning the day. They tie the dragon up, get the dragon to shrink down to a kind of dog side. The Sanctress gets some last minute hits in. The Sanctress faints, loses her power, and while they're questioning the dragon that Easton and Cecile goes looking for the book that Cecile had accidentally dropped in a little bit of the mayhem, and it's gone missing. They have no idea where this book went, almost as if it didn't exist. The Sanctress eventually does wake up. And she wakes up to see Irene standing over her with questions. And the book ends there. That is the end. What did I think about A Villainess for the Tyrant? I liked it. It was a lot longer than I expected it to be. It's a lot thicker than most light novels I've read. And especially for it to be the very first volume, a lot kind of sort of went on. More than what I talked about. It had a lot of unexpected things within the familiar pattern I've come to know and like. I especially like that the villainess was technically not the villainess. She was just the girl who has to play this part to stay alive. I am quite serious about the scenes concerning the Sanctress in showing her scenes. I do understand why. Were there because a lot of what she knew was kind of important, but at the same time it really wasn't. It was mostly her just talking about how she wanted to take over Cecile's body because she wanted to have sex with Easton, because she made Easton her ultimate male fantasy, though we don't quite know, we never did find out how she would have done so, nor do we know what will happen to her now that she has made her way into the palace and has survived the dragon fight with Irene standing over her? I personally would have been okay if she hadn't shown up until the end, busting into the room, shouting, "It should be a wolf and not a dragon." I would have been okay. I would have been like, "Who are you?" But then everybody in the room was going, "Who is that?" I would have been out of line for that. I like Eastian, despite his looks. I loved his dry humor and just how his whole reaction to Cecile was. It only really got a little weird for me with him when he ran into the mage Lord Richard, how he just started wailing on that man and cutting up his body parts with no hesitation and no cares in the world. Overall, I like it. I think most people will like it too, especially you readers listening. But as always, until next time, everyone, be safe, be smart, keep on reading or dreaming of what to read next.
Thanks again for listening to Musings and Limitless Discoveries. If you enjoyed what you've heard or want to know more of what's happening next, subscribe and or leave a review and some stars. You can also look me up on my website at jaleesabettis.com. There you will find more information about me and my weekly blog where I talk about anything that comes to mind.